Let me ask you this morning to be turning in your Bibles to the Old Testament book of Deuteronomy. We'll be in chapter 30, beginning verse 15. Deuteronomy 30, verse 15, we'll actually be considering down through verse number 20 of that passage. I want to welcome you to our radio broadcast on TGRN. We so appreciate you tuning into this sermon today. Hope and pray that what we do looking at this passage will be something that you can use in your day-to-day life. If you can, please come by and worship with us at the building in our physical address, and we would appreciate your attendance if you can at all be there. 146 Harbor Point Road was what I was looking for just a moment ago, so please come and be a part of our assembly. We begin at 10 on Sunday mornings, and we have only that one service on Sundays temporarily till we're past these COVID concerns. And then we also meet on Wednesdays at 6 p.m. We would like to have you for either of those occasions if you can. So please come and be with us. If you're isolating at home or know people that are isolating at home, please reach out to them. A call is so important from you, a contact of some kind, a text or a card, whatever method you choose to use, but to reach out and try to touch those individuals who are not able to attend is certainly a big benefit in their life. At the end of last year, there was a web-based company called BioLogos, and they set up a blog page for people to respond to a question about their faith in God. And the question was this: is it reasonable to believe in God? Is it reasonable to believe in God? Now, they asked that particular question because right now in America, the fastest growing segment of our society religiously is a subset of people that have been identified as the nuns. That's not N-U-N-S, but N-O-N-E-S, the nuns. Now, maybe you've heard of the nuns. They are a group of people, mostly younger millennials, who claim no religious identity of any kind. The largest percentage of them responded that religion has no importance in their lives at all. And the nuns are a group of people who have grown from 39 million to 68 million in roughly 7 years' time. And so they've almost doubled in 7 years' time. Because of that, today, less than half American adults attend any form of religious service on a regular basis. If you were to look on maybe a Google map or something to that effect that would identify what we often call the Bible Belt, you would see that the Bible Belt area of the United States is roughly stretching from as far north as Kentucky down to the Gulf of Mexico, and then as far west to the borders of Texas, and then east over to the eastern seaboard. Roughly that area has been identified as the Bible Belt in America. And this is where most people with religious affiliation live in our country. But obviously there is quite a lot more area that is outside of the Bible Belt than what is in the Bible Belt. In light of those demographics that are known in our how things are in America, that question was asked: is it reasonable to believe in God? Is it reasonable to believe in God? Well, I'd like to answer that question this morning from what Moses has to say to the people of his time in this passage of Deuteronomy chapter 30. And what Moses has to say to these people who lived thousands of years in the distant past helps us to see that it is reasonable to serve God. It is reasonable to believe in God and follow God's will for your life. And Moses is showing these people how to be shaped for serving God. I want you to read with me these verses. Deuteronomy chapter 30, beginning in verse number 15. Moses says, "See, I've set before thee this day life and good and death and evil, in that I command thee this day to love the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, that thou mayest live long and multiply, and the Lord thy God shall bless thee in the land whither thou goest to possess it. But," verse 17, "if thine heart turn away, so that thou wilt not hear, but shall be drawn away and worship other gods and serve them, I denounce unto you this day that ye shall surely perish, and that ye shall not prolong your days upon the land, whether thou goest over Jordan to possess it. I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live." Now the last verse of that chapter, verse 20. "That thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and that thou mayest obey his voice, and thou mayest cleave unto him. For he is thy life, and the length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them." The people of God under Moses in this context had been freshly exiled from their bondage in Egypt. They had basically been demoralized after having been in slavery for generations. Some 400 years in their past had been made up by slavery under Egyptian bondage. They were homeless in that now having left Egypt, they had no land of their own. And so God called Moses to lead these people into the promised land. Now Moses, you remember, was not really thrilled with the idea at first. He came up with a number of excuses as to why he was not the person God should use for this great task. Moses was asking, "Why me?" But God was saying to Moses, "Why not you?" So much of our lives and our relationship to God is just exactly that way. We tend to ask, "Why me?" And God is saying, "Why not you? Why not you?" Well, Moses was there, and he was troubling and struggling with that. Eventually, of course, Moses went, and he went to Pharaoh, and he, under the hand of God, the providence of God, freed those people from their Egyptian bondage. Most of the way, what the people did was gripe and complain. They loved Moses one day. The next day, they were wanting to stone him. They believed in God when it was clear and evident to believe in God, and they witnessed great miracles that God did. But when God seemed distant, well, they believed in a golden calf, and they grew impatient. And much like many of our day and time, they needed someone to connect the dots for them, to help them to see why it was reasonable to develop a strong and active life of serving God and obeying God. And that's what we find Moses doing in this passage. He's helping them to see that believing God, obeying God, serving God is not just a choice. It is the only reasonable choice to make. And so this morning, let's see how Moses helps these people to be shaped for serving. Moses is going to bring these people to consider three interrelated areas that will help them develop a lifestyle. Not a momentary decision, but a lifestyle of serving God. Let's notice what Moses has to say about the importance of these three things. Moses will talk to them about the importance of their relationship to God and how they must take care of that relationship. He will talk to them, secondly, about the choices that they make in their lives and how important those choices are, because they flow out of our relationship to God and what we're doing with our relationship with God. And then Moses will likewise talk with them about the blessings that God has waiting for them. And those Those three interrelated areas, those three areas about relationship and choices and blessings, Moses is using to shape these people to be lifelong servants of God. Let's see how Moses goes about doing that. The first thing Moses is going to talk about is the relationship aspect of these people's lives to God and how important that relationship is. Here again is Deuteronomy 30 and verse 16. "In that I command thee this day to love the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, and to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, that thou mayest live long and multiply, and the Lord thy God shall bless thee in the land whither thou goest to possess it." Now this verse is really not anything more than Moses taking the people of God full circle. The very first thing that Moses, or rather that God did for these people after they left Egypt was to give them a law, you remember. And we know that law as the Ten Commandments. Now the Ten Commandments, those were commandments. Those were the commands of God to these people. They were not the Ten Suggestions. They were not the Ten If You Want To's. They were not the Ten If You Feel Like It. These were the Ten Commandments. This was God's law. There was no arguing about this law. There was no bickering. There was no adjusting. There was no alterations to this law. This is God's law to man. And that law served a very important function. It served to protect those people. It served to guide those people. It served to give them hope and direction in their lives. And most importantly, it served to forge them into a people, to make them uniquely God's people. They had a law all to their own that they would follow, and that law came from God. Do you remember what that very first law was? It's found in Exodus 20 and verse number 3. "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." That was the very first law that God gave these people. So now here we are in Deuteronomy 30, Moses' farewell speech. And he brings the people to remember the importance of putting God first above everything else. The importance of that relationship to God. The importance of keeping God first and serving God above anything else that would ever be in their lives. In verse number 16 we find this, "And I command thee that this day to love the Lord thy God, to walk in his ways, to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments." That's Moses' command to these people, to honor that law of serving God. Now his logic, it's not hard to follow. Because you see, our relationship to God is the key to every other relationship that we will ever have. Our relationship to God touches and colors everything about our lives. If you take care of that relationship first, then serving God will not only be the most reasonable thing to do, it will be the only thing to do. And so Moses is bringing the people to consider how important their relationship to God is and how that he must be first. It's interesting to me that in the very first public sermon Jesus ever gave, what do you suppose he gave as something that was the most important thing for the people to do? Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33, "But seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you." You see, this kingdom of God must be first. The righteousness of God must be first. It's like a grid or a paradigm that is the basis of everything we do. And then everything else attaches to that and flows out of that. And I want to tell you something. If the kingdom is not first with you, then it will not be reasonable to serve God. It just won't. That won't make any sense to you at all if God is not first. Excuses will come frequent and easy. Almost anything and everything will interfere with your service to God. If God is not first, then it will not be reasonable to serve God. But on the other hand, If the kingdom is first, if your relationship to God is first, if that's the most important thing in your life, then nothing will interfere with serving God. Nothing will be more important than that. And today, our relationship to God is just as vital as it has ever been. Your understanding of God's place in your life directs everything about you as a person. Your understanding of His place in your life, well, it controls every decision that you ever make. It controls every word that comes out of your mouth. It controls every post you put on Facebook. It controls the people you choose to associate with. It controls every action, every attitude. All of it stems from your relationship to God. If God is first, then serving God has no competition in your life. And there will not be anything of this world to bump you off center of that relationship you have with God. Nothing will affect that. I don't think I would be doing us a favor this morning if I didn't remind us of Romans chapter 12 and verse 1. I beseech you therefore, brethren, by the mercies of God, that you present your bodies a living sacrifice, holy, acceptable unto God. Now watch this. Which is your reasonable service. You see, Paul has just told them to give your whole lives over to serving God. And then he says it's your reasonable service. Well, why is that reasonable to do that? If God is first, it's the only reasonable thing to do. It's the only thing that makes sense. But if God is not first, then giving your life over to serving God will not make any rational sense to you at all. But you know, I wonder if we could ask Paul. Paul, was it reasonable for you in your life to serve God? Was that a reasonable thing? You know, Paul faced a lot of difficulties in his life. You can look at the book of 1 Corinthians chapter 11, and you could read a whole list of things that Paul had to deal with in his life. Terrible things, difficult things for his life of working and serving in the gospel. I wonder if you could ask Paul, was it reasonable to have to put up with all of that in the service of the gospel? Was it reasonable to put God first in everything? Was it worth it? Well, you know what? Paul would say something like this. For to me to live is Christ and to die is gain. In Philippians chapter 1 and verse 21. He would say something like what we find in Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20. For I am crucified with Christ, nevertheless I live, yet not I, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by the faith of the Son of God, who loved me and gave Himself more for me. And because Paul's attitude was that God is first in everything, it controlled how he lived his life. It was the most reasonable, rational thing to do. And when he came to the end, he came to the end with great confidence. He said, I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course. I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but also all them that love His appearing. Brethren, this message from Moses is just as fresh today as it was the day Moses wrote it down for the very first time. Thousands of years have passed. Hundreds of things have occurred in the history of mankind. But still the most important thing for every man, woman, and child of an accountable age is that serving God is the only reasonable thing to do. Take good care of that relationship. Feed it, nurture it, protect it, provide for it. It's not going to be easy, but you know what? The right choice hardly ever is the easy choice. Don't just give God a place in your life. Make sure that He is your life. And then and only then will serving God not only be the reasonable thing to do, it will be the only reasonable thing to do, despite what you may have to go through in your life, despite what may be happening in the world all around us. It will be the only reasonable thing to do. And I promise you this, if you put that relationship to God first, you put God first in everything, you'll be shaping yourself. God will be shaping you to be His servant. And nothing else will interfere with that. So thinking about our relationship to God, what that does for us is that helps to shape us into servants. But let's talk for a little bit now about our choices. You see, our choices are a direct outflow of the place God has in each of our lives. I want you to look particularly now at verse number 19. Deuteronomy chapter 30, verse 19. Moses says, I call heaven and earth to record this day against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. And Moses will then say, therefore choose life, that both thou and thy seed may live. You know what? We live in a world that particularly likes to dodge accountability, doesn't it? It's not anything different, really, than what's always been in the world around us. We've just kind of found new ways to go about it. You remember back in the garden, the woman that thou gavest me was what Adam said to God. We still pass the buck today. We still dodge responsibility today. But the truth of the matter is, we do have a choice in what we do. And those choices do matter. Those choices flow out of our relationship to God. That's why part of what Moses' farewell message is, you choose life. And what he means by that is what he's been talking about, what he's been describing. What he means by choosing life is, you love the Lord thy God. What he means by choosing life is you walk in His ways. What he means by choosing life is you keep His commandments, His statutes, and His judgments. That's what he means by choosing life. That's how we do it. That's how we make the choice that I want to live the life God has for me. I follow God's will. I obey God's will. I am obedient to those things that God gives me within His Word. And then basically down in verse number 20, what Moses will do is he'll just repeat all of that again. Deuteronomy 30 and verse 20, that thou mayest love the Lord thy God, and thou mayest obey His voice, and that thou mayest cleave unto Him, for He is thy life, and the length of thy days, that thou mayest dwell in the land which the Lord sware unto thy fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give it to them. It's an important passage because it reiterates what Moses has just said, the importance of making choices of obeying God. I was a few years ago, an advertising agency down in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, came up with a slogan that they put up on billboards all across the United States, and one of them appeared in Dallas. Anyway, one of the messages said this. It said, have you read my number one bestseller? There will be a test. And it's signed God. You know what? What makes our choices so important is that there will be a test. There will be a test. You and I will stand judgment for the choices that we make in this life. Jesus said in John chapter 12 and verse 48, he that rejecteth me and receiveth not my words hath one that judge him. The word that I have spoken, the same shall judge him in the last day. You see, we're going to meet the words of this great book again. We're going to meet the words of Jesus again. Jesus does not have all of his final say in this world, but in the world to come, he will have the final say. And he will be the judge of all mankind. God will hold us accountable for the things done in the body according to that which we have done, whether it be good or bad. 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse number 10. And you see, that's just where the Bible is so helpful. It is so helpful because what this book does is to show us how to make good spiritual, moral, and even day-to-day choices. We all need guidance from God in this life because on our own, we usually don't make good choices. Oh, I have lots of things in my life that I have filed under the category it seemed like a good idea at the time. Unless I miss my guess, you probably have a lot of those as well. But the way to correct my life from day to day is to use this book every day. The Bible helps me to make wise choices. It helps me to be wise, not otherwise. And it directs me in those all important things about, well, my relationship to God. It directs me in my spiritual life in many different ways and in ramifications that affect my life. In fact, what this good book does for me is help me to understand that my choices affect everything I do today, because everything I choose affects tomorrow, it affects others, and it affects eternity as well. And you see, it's God's Word that helps me to realize that. Thinking about the importance of the choices that I make from day to day will help shape me into a servant of God. And so Moses has told them about the importance of their relationship, about putting God first in their lives. He's told them, secondly, about the importance of their choices and how those choices just naturally flow out of the relationship they have with God. And then finally, Moses is going to talk to them about their blessings, the blessings that God has waiting for them. There's a land promise that is recorded for us and would be given to these people. And that land promise is found in verse 16 and also verse 21. And that land promise is referring to the Canaan land to which they were heading. And all these people had to do was muster up the faith to trust God enough and have the courage to go in and take the land. But it took them 40 years for that to happen. The reason it took that long is because you'll remember 10 of the 12 spies who went in to spy out that land, they came back with a report that they were not able, that we cannot take the land. But God said they could take the land. And that cost them 40 years wandering in the desert. And so it's important that here are some of the last things that Moses is saying to these people, and he calls them to look forward to the blessings that are still waiting for him. The reminder of those blessings, the reminder of what God has prepared for them, that would help shape them into being servants. Now, they were looking for a physical land, a geographical spot on the globe, a land area that would be identified as their home, the place that they would be living in, and they would pass down to their children and their grandchildren after that. They were looking for a physical land. The promise, the blessings that are held for us, are much grander than a physical land. The promises that are held for the faithful child of God today are promises of an eternal land. God has not prepared a physical place. He's prepared a spiritual place, an enduring land, a land described that is eternal in the heavens, a house not made with hands, in 2 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 1. You may remember the time Jesus sent out his disciples and he had given them powers and abilities that they had never had before. And when they came back, they were like a kid at Christmas, really. They were just all excited about what they were able to do and the abilities that they now possessed. But in Luke chapter 10 and verse 20, Jesus told them this: "Notwithstanding in this, rejoice not that the spirits are subject to you, but rather rejoice because your names are written in heaven." Jesus was taking their focus off the abilities they had to work all of those miracles and to think about the fact that what is the greater blessing is that their names were written in heaven. That's one name I want my, one list rather, I want my name on. The list of those whose names are written in heaven. Revelation chapter 21 is a grand picture of how things will be in the next life. The last verse of that chapter says this in Revelation 21, 27. "And there shall in no wise enter into it anything that defileth." He's talking about that eternal home, that house not made with hands. Nothing is going to come in there that will defile that place. "Neither whatsoever worketh an abomination or maketh a lie, but they that are written in the Lamb's book of life." I think maybe what this verse helps me so much with is that it shows me it doesn't matter how a person begins in this world, it does matter how they end. If you want to be in the Lamb's Book of Life, then you have to serve God now. What helps to shape you and to help shape me into His servants is the understanding about my relationship with God, and to put that first above everything else. And then to make good choices in my life, choices that reflect the attitude of heart and mind that God is first. And remember, there's blessings that God has waiting for those who are faithful to Him. This morning, if there's any way that we here at the Beacon Church can help you to be shaped for blessings, to be shaped for your eternity, to be shaped for serving God in your life, then we're more than willing to do so. We're glad to hear from you. Just please reach out to us by the information that you find on our webpage or our Facebook page, and we will be glad to assist you in any part of your service for God. Thank you for tuning into our program this morning.